Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to Dome and Domer, the oldest Notre Dame podcast on the planet. And that will unfortunately continue for another year as our work is not done. We came close, but we're not done. Joining me tonight, Ed Jordanic, also joining from ndnation.com, Mike Coffey. Ed, I'll start with you. I think the frustrating thing for Notre Dame fans is that we actually had a chance to win this football game. It wasn't like going into it, I should say. We talked about some things that needed to happen. We didn't have to play a perfect game, but you couldn't show up and play the worst game out of the four playoff games that you've played. And unfortunately, that's what happened. And I'm not going to sit here and say that Ohio State wasn't part of the problem either, because they were. And I would specifically point out it was Howard. I just thought he had an unbelievable game. And the thing that's crazy is, as good as he was in the air, he pretty much killed us on the ground. That's the difference. We just could not stop them in third and long because he'd run the football. And we just didn't account for that. And so, you know, there's a lot of things we can point to that were mistakes. Both you and I were at the game. Thank you very much for inviting me. Great atmosphere. Really well done. Hats off to the CFP because they do a very nice job. And a shout out to the owner of the Falcons who kept pricing reasonable at the concession stands. That was pretty cool. But I mean, what were your thoughts on kind of the miscues that happened and the things that kind of shot us in the foot that put it too far behind?
Yeah, no, I think you captured it really well. We didn't play all that well. You know, there was so much sort of, in retrospect, you kind of wonder if that first drive was more a curse than a blessing. You know, it was exhilarating to watch. But like you made the point, you know, for the rest of the first half, you know, Leonard missed some open receivers, sort of some underthrows and overthrow. You know, he was obviously sort of physically shaken by the 10 carries he had on the first drive. I will say this, I think that, and I have this theory, and maybe it would take some research, but in my sort of experience, when there is a clear job waiting for a head coach or a coordinator, that team tends to underperform in a bowl game or in a big game. And, you know, you could take the example of how Notre Dame came out in 2012 with Brian Kelly, knowing he was interviewing with the Eagles the next day. There's just a lot of examples of this. And I thought that Al Golden got outcoached, outfoxed on third down. He didn't call a good game. And again, he's a pro. I'm sure he threw everything that he had into the preparation for this game, but you can't tell me that there isn't some distraction when you know you're going home the next day, when you know you're going back to your family, when you're making arrangements in your head, when you're wrapping up a lease. You know, all these things are sort of, and you're interviewing, you're talking to Zach Taylor. I mean, he probably had to talk to him a half dozen times between, you know, the Penn State game and the national championship game. I mean, that's just the way the business is. You know, I get it. I'll bet I think the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl because the Saints are going to make Kellen Moore their offensive or their head coach the day after the Super Bowl, and he's not going to do a very good job for the Eagles these next couple of weeks. I mean, right. I've just seen it so many times. So that's my little pet theory.
Well, I think you make a great point because there is some truth behind that. I don't care what anybody says, but
to be a little bit more serious, what you just talked about is we could not get off the field on third down, and you and I were sitting there and I was amazed at how many times, Christian Gray was matched up on Jeremiah Smith versus how many times Leonard Moore was matched up on Jeremiah Smith. And to me, that's just scheming. Now, it didn't kill us until the very last play, right? Yeah. You know, Jeremiah Smith did not go off on us. But I just felt that the defense didn't tackle very well in the first half and also just didn't seem to make good run fits and just seemed off. And we have not seen them play a game like that in quite a while. And maybe it's preparation. Maybe it's just, you know, Ohio State was just that good, but I don't think they were or are, you know, significantly better than Georgia or Penn State. They're better, but not by, you know, a league.
Exactly. That's the same way I felt coming out of that game. Coffee, I'm kind of curious. I this is a Monday morning quarterbacking question, and it's not really fair, but if you're on the sidelines and you see Riley Leonard come out of the game after the first series and he's throwing up and stuff, do you think it at least crossed their mind to put in Angeli on the next series? Or is that even something that's fair to ask at this point? But just the way that he performed in the Penn State game, man, you'd like to have that series back and give Riley another rest. Again, in hindsight, we got three penalties and we went three and out because it was third and 25, yeah. I think. But
yeah, I'm sure it's one of those things in retrospect. Maybe they could look back and say, well, maybe Steve could have given us a series there. But you're talking the second series, Ohio State is just driven down the field at will to tie the game up. I mean, it is crucially important. It's every series in that game was important, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think in this case, taking your starter out for a series is something that's going to, I mean, puking on the sidelines.
I'm not saying it.
That's going to get second guessed.
I just think they weren't going to do it no matter what because he wanted to play, but man, he was throwing up on the sideline. It wasn't True. Like he was hurt. He was throwing up.
Yeah, I mean, and it's something that we right now, if he had done that, the three of us would be sitting right now saying, oh, that was the right thing to do, no matter what it looked like in the immediacy of the situation. But you have a head coach in his first national championship game. I think a little bit in the first half, the lights were kind of bright. And I think, again, just in the first half, I think a lot of people on the Notre Dame sideline clenched up a little bit. I mean, they had gone through, they had run a gauntlet to get there. I think this was the game. And I know we said this in the last show that we were wondering, is this the game where the injuries are finally going to catch up with us? And I think this is the game where the injuries caught up with us, especially on defense, because I think if you have Ben Morrison available and Riley Mills available on that defense, I think Notre Dame would win that game because they needed pass rush. They weren't really getting it. That's what you need Mills for. You needed everybody to be maybe moved down one receiver that would be a little bit closer to their ability point and have Morrison available to a senior on a youngster. And I think those two being available, if you don't get like Traore and Botello and all them, that would have made a huge, huge difference. And I don't necessarily agree with the distractions because usually when you see those distractions, they're not recovered from. I mean, when you look at the 2013 game in Miami, Notre Dame just looked like garbage the entire game, and that's what happens when you're distracted from your preparation. I think, was he distracted? Yeah, a little bit, but they got it together enough to come back in the second half and make a game out of it. And if he did get a little bit, okay, but at least they came back, they were within a score. They had the opportunity to win and got beat by a great player who was going against someone he was matched up with just because of injury.
Yeah.
My point was only that the defense, I think we got used to them looking like they were a move or two ahead of the offenses that we played in the four games. And I thought that in this game, Chip Kelly looked like he was a step or two ahead.
Chip Kelly's a great offensive coordinator.
He's a great offensive coordinator.
Let's remember.
He's a great offensive coordinator. You know, the other thing is you know, Denbrock's it was so interesting to me, like the Angeli point is fascinating to me. It's not so much bringing Angeli in, but I think that in a game like this, you've got to have a little bit extra creativity. And I would have loved to see after that smash mouth. I mean, it's hard for me to say that Notre Dame, the lights were too bright when they came out and basically punched him in the mouth for the first 10 plays of the game.
Yeah.
You know? But then I really thought that, and maybe this is an injury issue, but, you know, the best player on the football field, at least on Notre Dame's team, and maybe, you know, period, is Jeremiah Love. And there just did not seem to be a lot of creativity in terms of getting him the ball. Now, a lot of that was, you know, Ohio State, but it seemed like after that first drive, we didn't sort of figure out how to get 3, 4, 5, 6 yards, you know, running the ball. And maybe maybe we should have just come out after that first drive and just thrown a curveball and just thrown 10 passes in a row, you know, just to sort of, you know, shake up the thing and just go for broke and say, you know, this is our one shot. And we know we have to play this game. Like we have to score on every drive.
Yeah.
I didn't think they did that. When they woke up, it was just a little too late.
Yeah. I was a little surprised that they didn't isolate him a little bit. Like you say, get him where it's him and one guy that he's got to beat. To miss the tackle, even if it's behind the line of scrimmage. And it just didn't seem like they did that. Put him out in a flank position on a motion and have him, you know, catch a short screen pass or something. But, and I don't know, I don't know. I haven't heard any rumors about whether he was tweaked again but he never seemed to even get any kind of an opportunity to show anything. And he was bottled up from the get-go. And that was a really bad sign, because when that's the case, you know, that really squeezes us in terms of our options on offense. But, you know, I'll also point out just a couple things that I thought were keys in the game. These missed opportunities. I mean, that missed pass that Leonard threw over the middle was reminiscent of earlier in the season when he was missing guys wide open. I mean, just completely missed them. There must be something about his throwing in his own mind when a guy's cutting across the middle of the field on a short crossing route, because he constantly missed that pass and it was wide open. And, you know, if that guy shakes one tackle, it's 10, 12, 15 yards.
Sure.
And to miss that was huge. That fourth down play that we ran and Jelly throwing to Faison, I mean, that was perfect. It was perfectly tossed right where you want it. Guys got to make plays, and he just didn't make the play. And, you know, that's a frustrating thing, because that was huge. But then the missed field goal, I know there's a lot of talk about that. I totally loved the call going for the field goal, because we talked about this before the game, that noose would tighten and tighten and tighten on Ohio State in the fourth quarter, the closer this game got. And I think when you go from 16 to 13 points, man, that just mentally is an oh shit, they're two touchdowns and they beat us. And then to miss that field goal, man, that is just demoralizing as a team. It's just hard to, you know, it's like you can't get any breaks.
Yeah. Those four plays, you know, starting with first and goal at the 9, those were sort of key plays. And you know me, I always sort of, you know, sort of bristle when people are so quick to criticize play calling. But I think sort of execution but it was a puzzling choice of plays that we ran there, you know, from first and 9, including, you know, throwing a fade, which is always a waste. It's the stupidest goal line play in football. You know,
unless you've got somebody that's so overmatched, you got to have somebody that's 6'3" going against 5'10".
Right. Yeah. Unless you got Harold Carmichael.
Right.
But, so anyways, but yeah, but Jeter's got to make that. He's got to make it, because like you said, Mike, it puts like another brick in the wall. You know, it just kind of, you know, it's like, we're not going away. You know, we are not going away. You know, so it was tough, because you just felt that it's so funny how we've all been sort of, you know, Marcus Freeman not only is good at, you know, building culture with his players, but he's good at building culture with his fans. Because I think if you interviewed all of us, what we would say is that the problem was that in this game, Notre Dame did not come close to reaching their full potential, which is, you know, what he always talks about. Like, you know, like this is a never ending quest to reach our full potential. And it seemed like they took steps from IU to Georgia to Penn State to sort of set that bar higher for themselves. And then, you know, in the big game, they just fell short. And I'm sure it's bitter, because I'm sure that nobody understands that or realizes that, you know, more than they do. You know, I'm sure that, but like Mike Coffey said, I mean, you know, Riley Leonard played his ass off, especially in the second half.
Yeah,
he made some throws. Mm-hmm.
He made some great throws. I mean, there's some big time throws.
I watched some Senior Bowl highlights last night. The dude was slinging it. I mean, he's, you know, if he can get the right guru and sort of like he's going to help a team. I really think he could help a team.
Well, I think somebody's going to take him.
He's a prototypical pro body for a quarterback. Yeah. You know,
there are guys a lot worse than him who have been holding clipboards for a long, long time.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. So, absolutely. And 90% of them have been on the Bears sidelines.
Exactly.
But anyways, and you know, I'm sure we're going to get to this, but with success, I mean, 14-2, it's crazy that they played 16 games.
Yeah, I know.
But it, you know, with, you know, and like Mike Coffey said, they were, you know, they looked a little bit more like the beat up team. Ohio State looked a little fresher, looked a little sharper. And it's understandable. I mean, you know, nobody seems to, and I think it's a good mindset, but nobody seems to sort of look at, we've been talking for 20 minutes and we haven't said, oh, well, they threw the offensive line together like in the last 10 days, which is basically what they did. Right.
And I thought the offensive line played great, relatively speaking.
Relatively, yeah, they didn't. They held up for sure.
They held up is what they did. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that, you know, look, we could list out the reasons Notre Dame lost. I think Coffey's right. You start out by listing out Jordan Bethello, Riley Mills, Traore, and
Morrison.
I mean, those are four huge contributors that would have made a big difference in this game. And, you know, we just didn't have it. Yeah. And that, you know, that's just,
And then the guys who are playing behind them are playing a lot more reps than they would otherwise. So not only are you playing one level lower in talent, you've also shrunk the depth. So the guys who are playing are going to have to play more than I think anybody, including Golden and Freeman, would have wanted them to. Nothing against those guys, but you know, they had a lot asked of them over the last couple of weeks.
That's just, He's out there fighting all heart, but he was 70% at best. Oh, I mean, at best.
We forget, you know, there's role players too. That guy, Jason Onye, you know, he played 15, 20 snaps a game before he went out. And, you know, he would have sort of extended Cross's lifespan a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, down the stretch. And also, I mean, you know, we sort of just conveniently forget, you know, by the end of the season, Anthony Knapp was a pretty damn good left tackle.
Yeah, he was.
All of a sudden, he was gone. You know,
gone.
So, and I think that the evidence of that is, you know, by, you know, when you see who's in the portal. I mean, it's pretty mm-hmm. clear those guys. You know, if they figure if they don't want to leave anything to chance, so that they're game one starter, they're not going to. That's not,
especially when you're going into your last year of eligibility. I mean, if you want to have film to be able to get yourself drafted, I mean, you can't afford to be sitting behind a younger guy and just waiting for an opportunity. If
it makes total sense. Yeah, it makes total sense. You know, I think the other good thing coming out of this, which is encouraging for us, is just if there's one thing that's clear that Marcus Freeman was able to create from a culture standpoint is, man, these guys just never gave up. And their will to fight is something I've never seen in a while. And I mean a while with the Notre Dame football team. And so I think that, you know, being down 31-7 and then to come back and miss a field goal like that, I mean, holy crap, that is one hell of an effort. And you could just see it the way these guys were making plays on the field. But as that time got shorter and shorter going into the fourth quarter, you could just tell that they were just frustrated as all get out. And then you've got that big, huge play that happens on the third and long, which I guess became an issue in the locker room afterwards with some reporter. But anyways,
reporter's a jerk off. So
yeah, there's some weird stories coming out with that. I don't know what to make of that, but if I'm a reporter, I'm not going to go talk to the guy who's already been answering a bunch of questions who gave up a long throw and ask him the same damn question all over again. I mean, I don't know what that guy was thinking, but anyways.
I think the difficult thing about it, I mean, I don't know, to me, I kind of tend to give the media a break on some of these kinds of things, but I do think that when suddenly you have a vastly different environment after a game than you have for the entire year, where it's just a, you know, free for all, it's the responsibility of sports information to sort of set some ground rules, protect their guys, set up a process, you know, make sure that the media gets to talk to whoever that they want to, but it's not sort of like a, you know, there's some sort of a structure to it, because what you do is you're catching guys after they just laid everything out, you know, yeah, for basically, you know, it's a culmination, you know, it started like June, right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, they've been working their ass off since June. You know, but it does say a lot about the character of the team. You know, that Christian Gray's response was that he lost them the game. Of course he didn't lose them the game.
No, of course not.
You know,
of course
not. But his sort of feeling of ownership, you know, as a sort of a stakeholder in the entire enterprise is pretty impressive.
And the fact that all of his teammates immediately went to him and said exactly what we're saying. No, you didn't. And you have players taking ownership not only of their play, but also of their teammates to say, you know, we are a cohesive unit here. We win, we lose together. And I think that's what led Morrison to lash out at the guy, because he's in there like poke. And finally Morrison's like, get out of here. And
Right.
I would have done the same damn thing.
Yeah, no, I get it. I look, at the end of the day, I think that the exciting thing is that there's a lot of positive that's coming out of this. I think from a recruiting standpoint, there are stories like guys who are five stars that want to just come talk to Marcus Freeman because they just want to talk to the guy. They think he's an enigma and they just want to hear like, okay, I just want to see what this guy's like. I'm not going to go to Notre Dame, but I want to go visit so I can talk to this guy. That's what you want. Absolutely. You want that kind of stuff. Because that's where the difference is made. And if Freeman can just keep this culture going, I think there's some really special things coming down the pike, because there's going to be some great efforts and great, he gets the right kind of talent in there, and look out. I mean, there's going to be some real exciting football coming our way.
Well, put it this way. Next August 31st, when Notre Dame gets off the bus in Miami, they're not going to look shell-shocked like they did in, like, what was it, 2017, when they came off the bus looking all scared of people and they get their doors blown off. That is not going to happen.
No.
You know, the other thing is that I think is important is he exploded a myth that I think has sort of been either in the back or the front of, you know, people who follow this stuff like the three of us do for a while. And that is that you had to have, you know, consistent top three or four recruiting classes to win a national championship. You know, I think
it helps.
It helps, but I think Marcus Freeman showed that with the right guys, the right culture, some great depth, but not necessarily four and five star depth, right? No. You know, and developing players, that you could have a recruiting class every year between 8 to 12, you know, ranked 8 to 12 by the, you know, wise recruiting, you know, overseer overlords, and still be in the playoff and be competitive for a Final Four slot or a final, you know, or to get to the final game. Because I think that for fans, we have to sort of process that and remember that he's to use a great Brian Kelly phrase, he is shopping down a different aisle. And that's okay. It's okay to shop down a different aisle.
Yeah.
But you've got to sort of marry talent evaluation, think about it. We do not do well when we get a five star. We don't do well with five stars.
Yeah.
You know, whether you go, I mean, they do not pan out. You go from Gunnar Kjell to Greg Bryant to we don't
get Aaron Lynch.
You know, what? Yeah. What about, I mean, I must have heard Max Redmond's name, that he was going to be the next freaking John Lynch or the next, you know, Ed Reed for, you know, every day for a year. And he was, you know, he ended up at a, you know, junior college somewhere. So, you know, I think it's way more important to, you can't, you know, you got to bring in 24 stars a year or 15 four stars a year. Sure you do. But I do think it sort of sets back a myth that you've got to recruit with the Georgia's and Ohio State's and Alabama's every year to swing with them in the playoff system.
True. Yeah. But I, to your point, I think the culture is what helps those five-star players, you know, develop and conform isn't the right word, but buy into the team aspect of it. I think a lot of those five stars who didn't work out, I think the issue was they had coaches that weren't creating that team first atmosphere.
Well, as when you bring know. I think that premise is wrong. I think the premise is that maybe maybe you can count the five stars that will fit into that culture on one hand every recruiting cycle. And by that, I mean, by their nature, five stars are going to be not necessarily fits for Notre Dame just because they are divas. Or,
well, especially with the NIL now, it just makes it twice as worse. Now it's, you know,
yeah, now they're going to be right. They're going to have one eye on the NFL the whole time that they're in school, or one eye on their paycheck, or they're going to be, you know, they're going to be regionally locked in, whether that's into Alabama or Georgia or Florida, you know. So I don't know. You're probably right, Mike Coffey. I mean, yes, it helps to get a five star when a culture is attractive. Absolutely. But I do think that for Notre Dame, at least, I mean, you know, Nick Saban would get, you know, or Ryan Day can get, you know, 6 5 stars a cycle. And if two of them pan out, they can be Jeremiah Smith and they can be whoever, yeah. And they could be your superstars. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think Marcus Freeman has a little bit tougher task in the sense that if he gets a five star, it's not kind of like a, you know, 1 in 6 chance that the guy turns out to be a superstar, or, you know, it's going to be maybe 50-50. You know,
so. Or you need it to be a 1 and 1. And if it's a 0 and 1, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, I think the other thing that we're going to find out fairly quickly here, and I think there's at least some confidence that Freeman can navigate his way through this, but these changes, he's done a really good job in the last couple of years handling that. He's now got some big changes, and I expect he's going to be able to handle that pretty well. I like the Ash hire. I think it's a great move. I think anytime.
Even better is he was able to convince Mickens to stay,
yes,
and learn, yeah, with the guy. That's, yeah, even bigger.
I think that's exactly right. I think it speaks volumes to Marcus Freeman that he was able to coordinate that and make that work and getting Mickens to stay. Which is only going to up his stock, I think. I think Mickens is in a great situation. Do it for a year or two. And then when you're comfortable, then you know, take a bit full advantage of that. But, mm-hmm, the other guys, you know, the GM move, that's not too surprising because, mm-hmm, somebody must have been doing something right at Notre Dame. And so, mm-hmm, it's only natural that somebody's going to swoop him up and pay him more money than we'd be willing to give him at that position.
I think that's more of a commentary on Lincoln Riley's desperation than it is on Chad Bowen's,
yeah,
expertise.
I
completely
agree
with that.
I mean,
how many times over the last couple of years, I mean, for those out there who follow recruiting closely, you'd ask, oh, so-and-so is ready to commit. So-and-so is really positive on Notre Dame. And then they go somewhere else. I think one of the issues with Bowen was he didn't necessarily – I mean, he could bring the guys, he'd get the guys on campus, sometimes could get a little schlocky. I mean, some players like that, some players didn't. But I don't think he had a good sense of where recruits' heads were at. I don't think he had a good idea of, yes, this guy really does like Notre Dame. He is really focused on it. And not necessarily addressing, well, there's some areas that he's not feeling right about. And the grass was always greener on his side of the fence, and maybe a little bit less of a rosy outlook might have helped, you know, bring a couple of those guys we missed out on in if we, yeah, stayed on top of them like we should.
Do we know, is the Texas Tech guy a done deal, or is that just
no word yet? Everything I've heard says they're talking to him. I don't know if anything's official been done yet.
He's obviously distinguished himself, in a couple of years. Couple of years down there. I mean, it is an important role. I mean,
it's a huge role.
Yeah,
this world, that's a key.
Yeah, really, they definitely need to get that done.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do the way too early prediction. What do you think next year? At this moment, what's your gut telling you?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, it's funny because you guys know, it's a little bit calmer than it was in the Kelly years, but the off season always brings surprises, right? I mean, you know, as soon as we think that we're sort of locked in for next year, you know, so there's a domino effect somewhere somehow, and Mickens does leave because he gets a DC job,
yeah,
that he just can't turn down, or,
yep,
you know, we think that, you know, Denbrock's around, and then all of a sudden, you know, somebody, you know, there's some domino that falls and he gets offered a head coaching job and he decides that he's really got to give at least one shot in his career to be a head coach. You know, who knows? You know, we also might find out in May that, you know, CJ Carr's shoulder is chronic and it's not something that is ever going to heal correctly. And, you know, his career may be, I mean, I hate saying these things, but you know, there's always surprise.
Yeah. You don't know. That's true.
You just, yeah. You know, so, but I do think that on paper, at least, and I always think it's, you know, I think Al Golden left behind not just a bunch of good football players, but a bunch of smart football players. You know, it's going to be, to me, at least it's going to be one of those years where it might take a little bit for a new offensive line, a new quarterback. We know the skill position should be pretty well populated, but where, you know, kind of like the Texas A&M game, you need the defense to sort of set the tone and you need the offense to do just enough to beat Miami and to beat Texas A&M. You know, those are the first two games. They're probably, you know, the two toughest games on the schedule, at least on paper, you know, tougher than USC right now, as far as we know. Maybe not, maybe, you know, we get Boise State at home. So that's an advantage right there. So I'm hedging, but I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to say, 2 to 3 losses next year.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that because that's where I'm at as well. I think it's going to be a 2-loss. We'll be 10-2. And the reason I say that is just the law of averages. I mean, you play this many games, you're going to find that one game where things don't click and the ball just doesn't bounce your way. And then I think with those two games at the beginning of the season, maybe one of those two, we end up losing. So to me, I can kind of see a 10-2 season, but I think there's a good chance we could make the playoffs at 10-2, and that's all that matters. You gotta get into that playoffs, and well, I think with the
we kind of, you know, I don't know if we shed it completely, but the whole Notre Dame gets blown out in the big games narrative took a real hit this year.
Yeah,
and I don't care what anybody says, that sits in the back of committee members' minds, of other people's minds and stuff. So we're going to get a little bit of grace, perhaps a little bit of a benefit of the doubt, if we're on the bubble for a playoff spot. You know, if we're, you know, if it's a, you know, we might be a 7 seed or we might be a 10 seed, you know what I mean? Those kinds of things, because we have demonstrated that we're not going to go up against an SEC team in the first round of the playoffs and lose 42-15. Now, maybe we will, but at least we've shed that reputation for a while.
Yeah, there's some real truth to that. Coffee, what do you think?
Well, I'm going the other way from you, bad luck Schlepp Rocks here. I think the schedule next year sets itself up well. I would say 0-1 losses in the regular season. I think the schedule is very front loaded from a, like I said, an on paper talent thing. And on the one hand, I'm a little nervous that our bye is so early, but then again, the bye is between those two really tough games. And then
we have two byes.
Where's the second one?
Before second USC.
One, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's two.
I was told there'd be no math. But no, two. I think the latter half of the schedule is light. If there are some injuries early in the season, they can recover from. And I think the thing that hurt us this year with players getting hurt and young guys having to get put in a position is really going to help us next year, because Jagasaw is going to be an outstanding guard. I think Knapp's going to be a great center. I think the offensive line is really, really going to be good. They're going to be good from the get-go because of all the starts that are coming back and all the playing minutes that have been coming back. I think defensive line is probably the key question mark, but I also think that I don't think this team's done in the portal yet. I think they're still going to have some opportunities to bring some guys in. I think guys like Bryce Young and stuff like that, who really showed us something in limited minutes relatively this year, are going to have a chance to really show us something next year. And figuring that the top two games are so early, that's way too early to have a lot of film on what Ash is going to do and how the defense is going to look different and stuff like that. So I think this team is going to make the playoffs with 0-1 losses, and I wouldn't be surprised to have it be Notre Dame against Penn State in the title game.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
Rose-colored glasses, baby.
Yes.
Yeah. Do we know, did Ben Johnson hire an offensive line coach yet, or is Rudolph still
I don't think he has yet, but I don't think it's going to be Rudolph. I think it's going to be someone more experienced. But, I mean, you never know.
Yeah, no, I think we'll that it works in our favor. I don't think Rudolph's ever coached in the pros, and I think that helps us a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yep. Awesome.
Cool.
All right, upward and onward. We'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jernanek and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.